The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Some experts actually believe that the reversal of Roe v. Wade is likely to trigger battles among states that could be unlike anything we've seen since before the Civil War.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we got a lot happening here in this final hour. I want to talk about the rise and fall of nations and quite often the cycle that they go through, but also just want to bring you up to some news. I want to thank my colleague John Morales for notifying us of this. Mikhail Gorbachev, according to all that's now being reported, has been called home to God. So this is coming from a lot of different sources. Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev has passed away at the age of 91. That's according to Russia's Interfax news agency. And as you probably know, I mean, Dr. Paul Kengor, a regular contributor to this program, is perhaps the best to talk about. And Paul, if you're listening, I'd love to have you dial in. We'll try to get you on to talk a little bit about this. He's written a ton of books on the area. Gorbachev, you know, was known for really ending the Cold War. And that Cold War ended without bloodshed, right? It ended with, but and here's the thing. I think God's grace was at work, too. And I think Gorbachev was a recipient of that. I really believe that was the case. John Paul II in 81 or 85 on March 25th consecrates the world, fulfills this long-desired third secret of Fatima, this Fatima message the Fatima message to consecrate the Russia to Immaculate Heart. And I think grace flowed. I think Gorbachev was a recipient. I've often shared about the fruits of the power of the rosary during the Cold War and how nuclear arsenals exploded, scientists died, events took place, Soviet forces left strategic positions with no logical explanation. And there were a couple key factors, a couple key principles, if you will, in the Soviet collapse, if you will. In 1991, Boris Yeltsin was freely elected, with Mikhail Gorbachev still clinging to power at the time. It's part of the former USSR. But if you take a look at the figures that were involved in the collapse, historians debate the credit. Who does it go to? Does it go to Gorbachev? Does it go to Reagan? Does it go to John Paul II? What about Margaret Thatcher? What about Lech Walesa and the Solidarity Movement? What about Havel? I mean, there's so many to name a few. These are the people who get books written about them. But there were a lot of behind-the-scenes players as well. And, Paul Kengor, as I said, have written about that many times. You'd love it. Gorbachev, he actually forged weapons reduction deals with the U.S. You got to remember the time in which we lived. I mean, the 60s and the 70s, the Cuban Missile Crisis. You take a look at the Cold War in the 70s and the 80s. Sister Lucia de Santis, just from a spiritual note on this, says that if it wasn't for John Paul's consecration, there would have been a nuclear war. You know, that we avoided that thanks to that consecration. And Gorbachev, I think, as I said, the recipient of some of those graces, forged these, reduction deals with the U.S., and with a number of other Western powers to remove the Iron Curtain, which divided Europe since the end of World War II, and bring about the unification of Germany. And when pro-democracy protests swept across the Soviet bloc, the nations of communist Eastern Europe in 1989, he refrained from using force. He could have rolled in there. He could have squashed that, but he didn't, right? And that was unlike the Kremlin. That was very different than anything that happened earlier. Leaders would just deploy tanks. They'd go in, they'd crush an uprising. That's what happened in Hungary in 1956 or Czechoslovakia in 68. So, you talk about criticism of the party, the state, you take a look at these types of things. Boy, there was a pretty heavy hand that would come down on the Baltic republics or anywhere where this took place. But a lot of Russians never gave Gorbachev, they never forgave him. They never... I think gave him the credit he did. He was due either. They felt that the subsequent plunge in their living standards was too high a price to pay for democracy. But I don't believe that. I believe that historians will record a very different narrative one day. So I would say to you, pray for the soul of Mikhail Gorbachev. You know, pray for his soul. And, you don't know the day or the hour. Lived 91 long years. Another side note, just one other thing on him, a couple other things maybe. He was actually awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. It was given to him in 1990. You talk about disarmament, the fall of the Iron Curtain, all these things. He was given the Peace Prize in 90 and is often seen as an admirable or even heroic figure in the West, in large part because he allowed the Soviet sphere to break apart peacefully. Again, not a bullet being fired. There was no war. There was no nuclear exchange. Peace. Peace is the fruit of prayer. It really is. Peace is the fruit of prayer. That's why, and just to take this on a larger scale, that's why I'm praying for Vladimir Putin right now in Russia. I mean, pray for his conversion. Pray for peace. That's my prayer every day. I'm praying for Xi Jinping, in China. I'm praying for so many of these world leaders who have the capacity and the spy networks, the technology, the money to really create havoc in the world. We need peace. And pray. I really believe prayer of the rosary is one of these things. I was thinking about that a little bit earlier. I was driving to our Green Bay studios, and I was praying my rosary in my car. And I was just thinking what Our Lady said about this beautiful prayer and how critical it is at this time. How important it is that we use that prayer to bring about peace in the world. I believe it brought about the fall of the Iron Curtain. I really do. Gorbachev, he sought to modernize his economy, to liberalize his society. He had those trademark policies of perestroika and glasnost, but instead of amping up the Cold War, he improved relations with the West. He signed that arms control agreement. And I often think about that. I mean, wouldn't it be better if we worked together? I remember Hillary Clinton went over with the old reset button. It didn't go over too well. But in terms of the big picture, I think it's good. I think we should. I'd rather be allies than enemies, wouldn't you? I'd rather be allies than enemies. I don't think Gorbachev, though, had any idea that the events that he helped set in motion would end with the superpower that he led ceasing to exist. I think if he knew that, maybe he would have done things a little bit differently. Maybe he did. I don't know. Men change. Hearts change. He was often described as one of the most significant political leaders of the second half of the 20th century. So in Russia, his legacy, I think, is very complex, particularly for those who like Vladimir Putin, who view the USSR's collapse as a profound tragedy. I often quote Vladimir Putin, who saw the collapse of the USSR as the greatest tragedy of the 20th century. Gorbachev ran for president in 96, and he won less than just 1% of the vote. I mean, less than 1% of the vote. So, he died. I'm not quite sure what took him. They just said he died this evening of a very serious and very long illness that he went through. So, we'll see what happens. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to join me. I'm going to take a very early break, Maggie, if we could do that right now. And when we come back, we'll give you an insight into Mikhail Gorbachev, Soviet leader who ended the Cold War and who took his final breath at the age of 91. Stay with me.
If you're just tuning in now and you're in your car and you're wondering what on earth is going on here, it's just a bunch of crazy happy Catholics who get together in the evening.
Pray the rosary? If you haven't experienced the family rosary across America yet, round up your family in front of the TV at 7 p.m. Central and stream the family rosary across America from Relevant Radio.
I would like to pray for my aunt.
I'd like to pray for my nephew.
I would like to pray for this little child that's been given limited days to live.
Do you believe in miracles, Luke?
Oh, yeah.
So do I, and that's what we're going to pray for. Sounds like you come from a good family. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 5 brothers and 1 sister.
Holy smokes. Nice. Your parents must be saints.
Yeah.
Spend half an hour with Jesus, His Blessed Mother Mary, and families from coast to coast. The Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky, 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio. Video stream on the Relevant Radio app and at relevantradio.com.
Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Yeah, some breaking news just coming in. Again, my thanks to my colleague John Morales for putting this on our radar. Mikhail Gorbachev, dead at the age of, I'm seeing conflicting reports. One was 91, the other is 92. He was the final leader of the Soviet Union and a reformer who helped really end the Cold War and lead his country from communism to capitalism. Joining me right now for perspective on this, who can clarify both the age and give us some insight into Mikhail Gorbachev, is none other than Dr. Paul Kengor. He's written many books and many articles, in fact, on the fall of the Soviet Union. He joins me now. Paul, Dr. Kengor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hey, Drew. Yeah, he was 91. He was born in March 1931. That's off the top of my head. And he was only 54 years old when he came in 1985. And at that point, he succeeded what had been three Soviet leaders over the previous 3 years. So you had the death of Leonid Brezhnev and Chernenko and Andropov. And Ronald Reagan said, "I want to negotiate with the Soviet leaders, but they keep dying on me." So Gorbachev came in, and as Reagan said, he was a very different kind of leader, least of all because he didn't die within the first couple of years that he was in office. But yeah, this is I just learned about this literally about 5 or 10 minutes ago, and it's quite a shock for me. I mean, my entire life studying all this stuff, he's always been around, and he's 91 years old, so in a way, you know, we expected him to go for a while now. He outlived his wife, Ryaza, by quite a bit. But he, you know, this is really, other than maybe Lech Walesa in Poland, I think this is the last of the major Cold War leaders. Reagan, John Paul II, Thatcher, Vaclav Havel, Boris Yeltsin. So this is really the end of a major, major figure.
You know, what did he die of? Do we know? Was it? They said it was a long illness that he succumbed to in the end. Any word of what he was battling? Was it cancer?
I don't know. I mean, somebody that age, 91 years old, it's kind of. I mean, I don't know what it was exactly, but I think the most intriguing thing about this, about him and his life. In fact, I'm going to write an article on this that I could refer. People should be up at American Spectator tomorrow, and I'm going to write about his faith. And yeah, for Catholics, in fact, my book, A Pope and a President, I almost called it A Pope, a President, and a General Secretary. I know that sounds almost like a joke, but it's really true. And because Gorbachev was the third figure in that book. Yep. And we instead focus mainly on Reagan and John Paul II. But both Reagan and John Paul II considered Gorbachev, in the words of John Paul II. John Paul II called him a providential man. So they really saw this final Soviet leader as somebody secretly baptized by his mother when he was a baby in the Soviet Union. And that was illegal to do in those days. And he was intensely interested in Christianity and really caused quite a stir. This was in March 2008. You could look it up. It was in the London Telegraph when a British reporter was going through Assisi. He was at St. Francis's tomb in Assisi, and he looked down and he saw Mikhail Gorbachev, the former leader of the Soviet Empire, the evil empire, on his knees praying. Wow. At the tomb of St. Francis. Wow. And the reporter looked at him and said, I'm sorry, sir, to interrupt you, but are you not Mikhail Gorbachev? And Gorbachev confirmed that he was. And the reporter from the Telegraph published a piece, Mikhail Gorbachev admits he's a Christian. And when I saw that, I immediately contacted Mike Reagan, Ronald Reagan's son, and Mike and I many times talked about the faith of Gorbachev, and I contacted Bill Clark, I was Clark's biographer. Clark was Reagan's closest advisor. Clark was working on converting Mikhail Gorbachev until Clark's final days, when Clark died in August 2013. And Mike Reagan and I banged out an article that we wrote for Christianity Today on the conversion of Mikhail Gorbachev. And very, very quickly thereafter, before we could even get the article in print, Gorbachev came out and said that he was not a Christian. And for whatever reason, he I was told by Bill Clark, who was told by people close to Gorbachev, that he had become a Christian, but didn't know how to deal with it publicly and didn't want to talk about it. So for whatever reason, if he did in fact become a Christian, he and maybe a Catholic, I don't know, to some degree, to some extent, with this special veneration that he had for Saint Francis. He was never public about it. It's a very strange thing that I've never been able to quite figure out about the guy.
Do you know what inspired his conversion? I mean, was there a person? Was it an encounter with John Paul II? I mean, gosh, brushing up against a man, a future saint like him, I'm sure must have planted the seeds of faith.
It was a big part of it. And in fact, Gorbachev went to the Vatican, I think it was in 1990, and they said, people who were watching said they had never seen anything like it. Gorbachev was literally shaking when he came in the presence of John Paul II. They said that they had never seen Gorbachev like that. His legs were shaking. And after he calmed down and John Paul II put him at ease, in fact, they said that we now have the transcript of the discussion between the two. And Gorbachev said to John Paul II, he said, would you like to speak Polish or Russian? And John Paul II, who spoke like six languages, including Russian, said, so why don't we speak in Russian? And so they spoke in Russian, I think, for about 45 minutes. That calmed Gorbachev down. And Gorbachev even invited John Paul II to come to the Soviet Union. And John Paul II to come to Moscow. It has been the first time ever for a pope. And John Paul II very diplomatically said, I would be happy to do that if that would be acceptable. Now, why would he put it that way? Well, because of the Patriarch of Russia, who to this day has refused the popes to come to Moscow. So the communist leadership wanted the pope to come, but the Russian Patriarch didn't. And this has gone on with the Russian Orthodox Church forever. So that's what John Paul II said. And then after that meeting, John Paul II called Wajeza over, and his wife Wajeza was an atheist Leninist to the bone, and died an atheist and a Leninist. And Gorbachev said, Wajeza, I'd like you to meet John Paul II, the Pope. He's the leader of the world's Christians, and he's a Slav just like us.
Wow.
And so that was kind of a nice personal moment among the three of them.
Hey, what was his relationship? So that's John Paul II. What was it like with Ronald Reagan? You know, they were on opposite ends of the spectrum at one point, but at the end, were they friends? I mean, what happened in that transition, and how did he view Reagan?
Yeah, they got along extremely well to the point where they became good friends, and they met for the first time at the Geneva Summit in Switzerland. That would have been November 1985. And by the end of their first day or two together, the press kind of marveled at how Reagan had his arm around Gorbachev and was calling him Mike. He was calling him Mike, and Gorbachev was calling Reagan Ron. They had this kind of fireside chat together at the boathouse in Geneva, and they hit it off right away. And Ronald Reagan always had this great confidence in himself that if he could just get a Soviet leader in a room together, Reagan was very confident in his negotiating skills, something he had acquired back in Hollywood when he was head of the Screen Actors Guild. And you know, Reagan knew this wasn't him lacking humility. He just knew that he had this really unique ability to get along with people. And, you know, Gorbachev, given the good personality that he had, he and Reagan really, they struck a chord. They got along really, really well together. And it was those two and John Paul II more than any other leaders who peacefully ended the Cold War.
Do you think Gorbachev, who, of course, you know, ended the Cold War without bloodshed, which is an amazing thing, but he failed to prevent the collapse of the Soviet Union. If he was able to foresee the future, knowing that that Soviet empire was to collapse, and you've quoted many times, as I have, Vladimir Putin, who says that was the greatest, you know, disaster of the 20th century, the collapse of the Soviet Union. Do you think Mikhail Gorbachev would have proceeded with these arms, you know, reduction deals and with all the things he did to help bring about an end to the Soviet Union as we know it?
Well, it's interesting. Until the day he died, I guess it'd be until today. So I don't know if he's made any statements to that effect in the last few weeks or months. But into the 2000s, into the 2010s, Gorbachev was still saying that, you know, what he had intended all along was to keep the Soviet Union together. You know, that was his intention. Now he wanted, you know, a kinder, better, gentler Soviet Union, a non-totalitarian Soviet Union. But Gorbachev, you know, right up to 1989, 1990, 1991, was using force in the Baltics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, trying to keep them from breaking away from the Soviet Union. Now eventually he did let it all collapse, but it kind of got to the point where he had no choice. I mean, every single republic that comprised the Soviet Union all broke away. They all declared independence. And Boris Yeltsin soon became the most popular political figure in Russia. Yeltsin won the first ever free Russian presidential election in June 1991. And at that point, there were two presidents in Moscow. Yeltsin, who was president of the Russian Federation, and Gorbachev, who was president of what was left of the USSR. And eventually got to the point where Gorbachev was presiding over a Soviet Union that didn't exist. So on Christmas Day, ironically, 1991, Gorbachev called President George H.W. Bush, and he said, "I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and I want you to be the first to know that I'm resigning as head of the Soviet Union." And when he did that, he basically resigned the Soviet Union itself. So on that day, Christmas Day, 1991, you know, a day that the Bolsheviks, the communist leadership in the USSR, sought to ban, he resigned the evil empire. Quite providential.
I always wondered why he didn't just stay in power after it all went down. It's fascinating. I'm curious about where we are now, too. And my guest today, if you're just tuning in, is Dr. Paul Kenger. We only have a few moments for him. He's highly in demand today. We're grateful for the time that we do have with him. Mikhail Gorbachev has died at the age of 91. And breaking news just happened moments ago. And I know Dr. Kenger is just learning the news as well. I'm curious as to, I mean, Hillary Clinton, you'll probably remember, went over several years ago and brought a reset button. It was kind of really weird and awkward. But the optics of that was to reset the relationship between Russia and the United States. Why do we remain enemies, and why can't we work towards working together in a stronger international relationship with Russia? Is this simply the inconsistency of political ideologies? What is it?
Well, it's totally Vladimir Putin, and you know, Putin in invading Ukraine like he did. I mean, you know, he did it first of all a few years ago with the Crimea, and you know, at that point he was further kind of separating himself from the West and, you know, really all the free countries of the world. And then to do what he did here under Biden last year in the last several months by actually invading Ukraine and going into the capital of all things, Kiev of all places. He's really completely blown it up. And I'm sure Gorbachev must have been really bothered by it. Boris Yeltsin would have been really, really bothered by it. And I know a lot of people, including a lot of conservative Catholics on our side, want to say things. Well, the United States didn't let Russia into NATO. It's the United States' fault for pushing. No, that's complete nonsense. There is no justification for Vladimir Putin going and invading and annihilating and dropping bombs all over civilians in a totally free, independent country that, you know, to bring it back to Gorbachev, freely broke away from the evil empire in 1990-1991. And here comes Putin by force trying to rope it back in. So, you know, this deterioration in U.S.-Russian relations, you could lay that at the feet of Vladimir Putin.
Hey, final thoughts from you, Doctor. I know you got to run. I'm curious. Gorbachev spent, from what I understand, much of the last two decades of his life kind of on the peripheral. He intermittently would call for the Kremlin and the White House to kind of mend ties, you know, to bridge that gap that they had. You know, as tensions soared to these Cold War levels with Russia when they annexed Crimea in 2014. And again, when he launched that offensive in Ukraine earlier this year that you referenced, I know he's been in and out of the hospital, and God just called him home today. But what was the latter part of his life like? What will his legacy be as we wrap up our conversation?
Well, the legacy will be peacefully ending the Cold War, and even though he wanted to keep the USSR together, you know, he was against the totalitarian Soviet Union. In fact, it was in February 1990. That he lifted what was called Article 6 of the Soviet Constitution, which had guaranteed the Communist Party of the Soviet Union monopoly on political power. It was the only legalized political party in the USSR from 1917 to 1990. And he changed that. That was a major positive thing. And what the world needs right now, Drew, I mean, we have, you know, not to dump on anybody here, but the current president is Biden, and the Pope is Pope Francis, and you got Vladimir Putin in Russia, and you know, I could even switch people. I could put Trump in instead of Biden, but we don't have right now a Gorbachev, Reagan, and John Paul II, and that moment in time, 1990-91, when we had 1989-91, we had those three leaders in power, and even George H.W. Bush. Those men changed history, and it shows really the importance of great leaders, great men. And we are lacking today. We don't have figures like that currently, that troika, if you will. I mean, those guys were phenomenally important, and they really created a better world.
Yeah, the devil and Karl Marx and a pope and a president. Would you recommend those two books? I know they're both written by you. I mean, what would you recommend if people want to learn a little bit more about that relationship?
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, Pope and a President is where I write at great length about those three and about the faith of Gorbachev and his interest in Catholicism.
Well, Doctor, thank you. We'll catch up. We look forward to your article.
Having that peace, that's going to be absolute confirmation that you have been following God's will, that you understood where God was calling you, you accepted that, you acted on it, and God will give you that peace.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, we kind of buy into things that we think are going to give us peace or joy or happiness. Paul talks about it in Colossians 2, 6 to 10. He's saying, no, be rooted in love, walk in him. See to it that no one captivates you with empty philosophy. So we could be what a friend had once called self-propelled Christians. So without God's love, it's almost like we're Fred Flintstone.
I guess it's kind of relaxing to know I'm at the wheel. Relaxing nothing. It's terrifying.
We're trying to push ourselves. God's like, you're being the protagonist. He says, let me do it. And when we do, you know, that peace is actually going to start to come up within us.
The Inner Life with Josh Raymond,
11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society. Not available in all states.
You can't be a half saint. be a whole saint or nothing at all. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. I'll grab a couple calls in just a second. You can get in if you want. I only have about 30 minutes left to hang out with you today. The number is 888-914-9149. If you're just joining us, giving you some holy hacks. I love that title. There's a book written under that title by Patty Armstrong, and I'll tell you how you can grab that as well. But look, if you're just joining me during the Chapel of Divine Mercy earlier today, my colleague Neil Robbins here sent me an email. He says, could you please pray for this father? His wife and his children, he had a family of four or five, wiped out when a car crossed over the line, hit his family head on, killing the driver of that vehicle and his wife and children. And I'm just struck by how fragile life can be. And we were created to live forever. One day we'll stand before God and we will have to account for our life. You know, and to be honest with you, we often put off going to confession. We put off, working on our spiritual life. We think we have time. And I just want to say to you, if you're in that camp, it doesn't have to be a slog. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step, right? Small steps. That's all. Take small steps. Patty was talking about holy hacks, and she says she has like 200 of them. And during the break, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, how many can I think of? And one of the things I do, I'll give you a hack that has changed my life in a very deliberate way. I could be on a boat. I could be driving in my car. I could be, at a ball game. But my phone will ring every afternoon at 3 p.m. Every afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, no matter where I am, whether I'm in Europe, South America, or the heartland of the USA, my phone rings. And the hour of divine mercy, it reminds me, if I can, I'll take the time and I'll pray the chapel. But if I can't, the Lord told St. Faustina, even if you can't pray the chapel or visit me in the Blessed Sacrament, even for the briefest moment, remember me and remember my passion. So I make that time a time of prayer every day without fail, even if it's just a short utterance. Lord, thank you for your sacrifice. Please have mercy on me and the whole world. I mean, it could be as short as that. The other hack I'll give you, and I'm sure this is a no-brainer for many of you, I was listening to a promo in my headset during the break, confession. I mean, we do ourselves such a disservice by not frequenting that sacrament. It's ridiculous. You want to rise in holiness? You want to rise above temptation and your proclivity to sin? That is the surest and the most, that's the fastest, the most prompt way, because Satan, it disengages the hook of the evil one. And then become a daily communicant. I'm a daily communicant, and you fall in love with the Lord. I'm telling you what, then all things change. There's a million of these, as Patty has pointed out, and you can check out her book as well, Holy Hacks. And if people want to get your book very quickly, Patty, what's the best way to get that? How do they connect with this?
You can go to Sophia Press, and it's Holy Hacks, 70 Ways to Live Your Faith and Get to Heaven. Patty McGuire Armstrong. I think if you just look that up, Holy Hacks, and go to Ave Maria Press. I'm sorry.
There you go.
I work with so many publishers.
You're confusing me.
I've had four publishers, and so I said Sophia because I read a lot of their books and I promote it. So anyways, it's Ave Maria.
That's great.
Sorry about that. So if you go to Ave Maria, Holy Hacks, Everyday Ways to Live Your Faith and Get to Heaven. And I love the part about confession, Gerard. I just want to say that I've interviewed quite a few exorcists, and I have a whole chapter on spiritual protection. Yeah. And one confession is worth more than 1,000 exorcisms because it has the power to take away the sin. It's a sacrament. It fills your soul with sacramental grace, and it's more powerful than an exorcism.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I want to hear about some of the things that the exorcist has told you. I always find them fascinating. But before we talk about that, before we grab these calls, I'll share an experience I had. When I was very young, I had gotten out of college, and I got into filmmaking, and I was doing a documentary. It was down in South America, and I met a mystic. And I learned so much from her. This is a woman who achieved those great heights of sanctity. She had the ability to bilocate, to levitate, to read souls, to prophesy the future. She bore the wounds of Christ. I mean, it was just, she's like a female Padre Pio. And one of the things, and I was very young, I was aspiring to do TV. I thought I'd, anchor television news, and, I was enjoying what I was doing here. And she gave me a bit of advice I never forgot. And it was very eloquent the way she said it. She said, Drew, pray for humility. Because humility is the crystal bridge that leads us to heaven. Humility is the crystal bridge that leads us to heaven. And of course, it's the antithesis of Lucifer, who puffed with pride, you know, lost heaven, yeah, and took a third of the angels with him. I was present during an apparition in Italy with another kind of hidden visionary one time, and the Virgin Mary appeared. And I was, again, young. I was in my early 20s at the time and had not had anything to do with radio. And the Virgin Mary gave me a message through this particular seer. And what she said to me, and I want you to speak to this point, because I think it's the secret of the saints. The Virgin had given me this very beautiful mission message about my role and what would happen, how I would reach multitudes. This is before I ever got into to talk radio. It kind of prophesied or predicted, gave me a picture of what my future could be or held, you know. But what Our Lady said when she concluded this message, and I won't go into all the things she said to me, but the final thing was the most resonant. She said, "My son, be humble, be humble, be humble. Be humble." She didn't say it once. She didn't say it twice. She didn't say it three times. She said it four times to me. "My son, be humble, be humble, be humble." And that I've never forgotten that. I pray for this virtue. The litany of humility is the most difficult prayer I've ever prayed in my entire life. If anyone wants to try this, you will suffer. you'll be given opportunities to be humble. Trust me on that. But let's speak to that, because I think this is one of the great secrets to holiness, to sanctity. You want a holy hack?
Yeah.
Be humble.
You know, people think of humility as a bad thing because you don't want to be humiliated. I have prayed, "God, instead of don't humiliate me, let me humble myself," so you don't need to do that. But the chapter I have on humility, I take people where they're at, and with scripture and reality, you get to the point where you want to be humble. And the reason is, it's so freeing. My husband and I, we pray the Litany of Humility every Friday. And it is a difficult prayer because it goes against the culture. But in reality, it frees you. Mother Teresa, and I've got a whole section on Mother Teresa and her tips for being humble. She said, when you're humble, you know who you are. Praise can't touch you and criticism can't either. And it frees you up, because when you're consumed with pride, you're trying to show how great you are. You're trying to show everybody, you either show off or you want to have this power or notoriety. And it's a lot of pressure. And you want everybody to think well of you. Well, yep. And in reality, we just want God to think well of us. And if we let go of all that, nothing can touch us. But it doesn't mean... I listened to a priest talk about this once, and so I put some of his quotes in the book, because he talks about holy forgetfulness. Just the idea isn't to put yourself down. That is not humble. A lot of people think the one saying, "Oh, I'm not good. Oh, gosh, you know, you're better." No, don't put yourself down, because you know why? That is still self-absorbed. You are still full of yourself if you're putting yourself down. Let it go, and you free yourself up. You don't need to be the one that's noticed. And the other thing is, now, okay, let's look at Mother Teresa. Most of us remember her or know of her. And she was one of the most humble people we had ever experienced. And she was also one of the most confident. That woman could stand up at a prayer breakfast in front of Al Gore and Clinton and their spouses and say, "Woe to you, America, if you don't take care of the least among you." And she was talking about against abortion. She got a standing ovation, except the president and the vice president and their spouses sat there with icy glares. But who has the guts to accept an invitation to a prayer breakfast and then say something as bold as that? And that is the thing about humility. You celebrate your gifts because they came from God. So when you celebrate, like, Drew, you can go to bed at night and say, "Wow, thank you, God. You've given me this platform. I can talk on the radio." But it's all about God. It's not all about Drew. And so you're celebrating what he's given to you instead of yourself.
You know, Patty, I pray in Thanksgiving more today than I have ever prayed before. It used to be a lot of petition, but I can't thank God enough, really, for both the crosses, but the blessings of my life. And I think when we pray that way, it also delights God. I think it's another great way to grow in holiness. Acknowledge God's goodness in your life. And if you begin to thank God, you're going to realize, gosh, he's such an intimate part of your life. And you begin to reflect on the hand of God in your life, you'll be surprised at how often you see it.
Getting you connected.
The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio. This is the Drew Mariani Show.
I like to call purgatory the mudroom of heaven.
The Cale Clark Show.
Knock off the crud from the outdoors before we can come in. Steve is calling from Minneapolis.
First of all, let me just say I really appreciate this show. And I grew up Protestant, but I tell you, I'm really warming up to Catholicism. Can you explain to me in a nutshell this concept of purgatory?
Thank you for your very kind words. And let me try to answer your question about purgatory. I'll tell you what the Catechism says about it. It says, all who die in God's grace and friendship, but still imperfectly purified, are indeed assured of their eternal salvation. But after death, they undergo purification so as to achieve the holiness necessary to enter the joy of heaven.
There's a lot that I'm rethinking, and I'm not sure where I'm going to land on it, but I do appreciate your prayers.
The Cale Clark Show, afternoons at 5 Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
His power is made perfect in our weakness. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Amen to that. It's great to be here with you today. Things Joe said, and I'm grateful for his call. Prayer in the middle of the night. I remember there was a time where I'd be awakened in the middle of the night. And of course, you could pray to fall back to sleep. But what I would do sometimes, and I don't want to say this for, you know, any sort of attention, it's something you might want to do at the middle of the night as a way to earn grace. I had such a deep devotion, Patty, for the souls in purgatory. I'd get out of bed and I would kneel down. So I wouldn't lay in bed, so I'd fall asleep. I deliberately take some time in the middle of the night, whether it's 2, 3, 4, whatever time I woke up, and I would pray for those souls or for the soul that was most in need of God's mercy at that hour. And I think praying in the middle of the night is such a great thing. Did you write about that at all in your book?
I talk about that, like if you wake up, of course, always use those little moments, whether you woke up and you can't get back to sleep. And I talked about kneeling. I love that you said you get up and kneel, because now you're making me realize, oh, yeah, get back to kneeling, because it's so easy not to kneel. But that in itself is really a huge thing, that to take that posture of kneeling, to inconvenience yourself, to make that kind of sacrifice. And I love what Joel says, because he's testimony to the transformation that is so total in your life when you start praying and it grows, that even in your sleep, you're praying and you're resisting temptation when you dream. Like, it really becomes, it pervades your whole being.
I love that. Joe, thank you. That's a great thing. Cause you ever been in a dream like that where you have a choice to do something right or wrong? But, you know, the grace is there. And I think it was a cool insight. I thought I was the only one who had that. Margo in Pontiac, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Drew.
Hey, Margo.
I want to just share this little card that our priest handed out this past weekend. It just says humility, and it's a quote by C.S. Lewis. But, you know, we're going to take him as someone who's going to be Catholic anyway. Anyway, it says, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And I just think that it's so powerful. And so when I start getting confused about, well, am I dealing with this, you know, in a humble way? And I just look at that and go, okay.
I love it.
It gets me sometimes.
I wish I had a fraction of his genius and creativity. The things he's been able to say, those adages and statements he's come up, just amazing. And Patty, I'll let you also respond to Margo.
Yeah, I love that too, because I actually have that in the book, and that is what Holy Forgetfulness is. And another thing along those lines is, if something does happen to disappoint you, instead of, you know, like, look at the blessings in that. And so when you think of yourself, think of God and look at, what is he doing in my life? Especially when you're stumbling or having a difficulty or a disappointment, instead of being disappointed, thank God.
You know, well, thank you. You're doing something in my life, Lord, that I don't see right now. But thank you, even if it's just for the humility. Thank you for the humility. You're helping me to die to myself and let go. But it really is. And Drew, you talked earlier about that, the power of humility. That any saint you ever read, they are humble. And when you think about it, why wouldn't you want to be humble? Because who wants to be like a prideful person? Amen. Nobody. So we love the humble people. So we can really work on that.
Joanne in Eadville, Texas, you also are a paragon of patience. Thanks for your call today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and blessings to all of you.
Thanks.
I found about a year and a half ago that I could get a large amount of miraculous metals, and they come with a blessed metal and the story of the miraculous metal, and I keep them with me all the time. And even today, I met a woman, and she was asking me about, did I feel it was a dangerous area or anything? And we got to talking, and I said, you know, I have something for you. And I gave her a medal, and she says, oh, my goodness, I was raised Catholic, but I haven't been in a long time. And I says, this will help you. And then she said, I said, let me give you one for your husband. And she said, I don't. And she says, no, he was raised that way, too. And a friend of mine, I gave her one, and she said her husband asked her for one. She's not Catholic, but he was raised Catholic. And he asked her for one, and I feel blessed because it's a blessing to me when people accept them. And a lot of people aren't Catholic, and they love them.
Yeah, no kidding. Mother Teresa would give those out like crazy, and the impact that they've had on people's lives is profound. Patty, I only have a few minutes left. I'll give you some final thoughts for her, and I want to hear your story also on the foreclosure, if we can squeeze it in.
Well, I love, Maggie, that you handled that. That's part of a way of evangelization, and St. Paul Street Evangelization does that too. And so, anyway, my story, wow, if you read Big Hearted Families, it has a lot of my story in there everywhere. I didn't learn to say the rosary until I was 30 years old. I used to write for the National Enquirer. My husband had a vasectomy in a reversal. We came around in so many ways, and one of the big ways was when we moved from Montana to Bismarck. We changed the way we prayed, and we said, "Okay, God, we want to go somewhere where we're gonna accept whatever befalls us, but we want to go somewhere where we're gonna grow in holiness and a good place to raise our family." Well, we didn't sell our house. Mark had lost his job. He got another radio job in Bismarck. And we had to rent our house out. The renters trashed our house. The real estate agent said, there's no way anyone's going to buy that house. So we thought, well, what can we do? We didn't have much money. We really qualified as economically disadvantaged. And we lived in North Dakota. What are we going to do with a trashed out house in Montana? All we could think of was to foreclose. But I heard about Danny Thomas, who had this devotion to St. Jude, and that St. Jude was the patron saint of impossible causes. And I said, well, before we foreclose, let's try this. That was the first time we'd ever prayed together. It was 1990. You couldn't get stuff on the internet back then. It didn't exist. So I had to do a lot of hunting. I found a novena. We took turns. He would pray. He read it out loud one night. I would back and forth. At the end of the novena, the renter called us and said, we're getting out of here. We heard a big noise in the basement. We don't know if this foundation is cracked or what, but we're getting out of here. And Mark goes, they can't get out. What are we going to do? How are we going to pay the mortgage? We couldn't afford two mortgages. I said, Mark, I don't know what's going on, but we know we can't sell it with them in the house. Just say, okay, we'll just let them go. So we let them go. My mother-in-law called from Hawaii. She and my father-in-law had just moved there. Something went wrong. They're like, we don't want to stay here. We need a place to go. What if we moved into your house, fixed it up, and we sold it and split the profit? That's what happened. We sold it. I think it was like a $14,000 profit. We split it half and half. They fixed up our house. It was an impossible cause. All we could think to do was to foreclose on it. And by the way, my mother-in-law was a very difficult person in my life, and God picked her to answer the prayer to our novena. So, St. Jude, if you haven't prayed a novena, get started. It's beautiful. 9 days of prayer. Find a saint that's your patron, and just one more relationship you can have with somebody in heaven.
Well, if you want to grow in holiness, check out the book, Holy Hacks, Everyday Ways to Live Your Faith and Get to Heaven, written by Patty Armstrong. Patty, thank you for being here with me today. I'm out of time for the day, and I'm grateful for all the great work you do. We'll catch up soon, okay? We'll talk about St. Monica and more.
Okay, thank you, Drew. God bless you. It's been such a blessing to be on today with you.
Always a delight. My thanks to Patty Armstrong. I'm out of time. Kale Clark is coming up in just a minute. Stay tuned for him. Your news and headlines, of course, are straight ahead. If you missed any of the conversation, be sure to hit our podcast, relevantradio.com. Keyword is Drew. I'll be back again tomorrow to give you a look at life you won't find anywhere else. Until then, may God bless you.
Here's another Relevant Radio miracle moment.
I just wanted to give witness as a millennial a little bit and just give a plug in for Relevant Radio and why we love it so much. So my husband and I have been married for almost 9 years, and when we first got married, I was a very lukewarm Catholic. And over the years, I've just been realizing that I've been benefiting so much from his holiness, and he's just helped me return to the faith wholeheartedly, and it's just been really great. And we have 4 young children, and within the last year we've made an active choice to have the sacraments just be the center of our family life. Relevant Radio, we've just become so reliant on it for not just learning more about our faith, but just to fall in love with it.
This miracle moment was brought to you by you.
We're only able to broadcast because of your generous support. Donate safely and quickly online at relevantradio.com or by using the Relevant Radio app.